All right, everybody, welcome back. I'm Simon Ward and I'm your host for this weekly High Performance Human podcast. Hey, listen, I'm pretty certain in the last few months you've come to value your health and fitness as much as I have. Personally, for the last few years, I've been slowly adjusting my approach, not just in the way I conduct my own training, but the way in which I coach other people. And it's one where health and human performance has come before race fitness. Now, the two are inextricably linked, but what I've become more aware of is how good performance cannot exist without good health. And the whole coronavirus outbreaks just reinforce this belief. In 2020, we might have had our racing interrupted, or it might have been erased completely, but that's not stopped us, has it? We've carried on. I know for sure that many of you found new ways to stay active, and hopefully, like me, you've started to enjoy the process and discipline of daily exercise, and that have given you new purpose. That's not to say we won't embrace the opportunity to race when we get the chance, but I think when events like COVID-19 challenge our health and enjoyment, we start to realise what is truly important. In future podcasts, I'll be sticking occasionally to the triathlon theme. But more importantly, I'll be looking at this whole subject of the high performance human. And I hope you enjoy the new lens which we're looking through. And it will definitely be my goal and my pleasure to share information which will educate you and enable you to achieve your potential as a human being first and then an athlete, and help you to create the foundation to be the best version of yourself. Whether that's triathlon, ultra running, cycling, open water swimming, whatever you like. Human first, then athletic performance. Anyway, enough of what's coming up in the future. Let's get back to the present and crack on with today's guest. Welcome back, everybody. And today I have another one of our high performance human guests. So firstly, welcome to the show, the managing director of Orion Personal Care and a longtime friend of mine, Dan Williams.
How's it going? You okay?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Yeah, how does you've got your own podcast now? So how does it feel to be on the opposite side of the screen?
Oh, I don't like it. I don't like being on either side, to be honest. I just stumbled into that podcast. It was never an ambition at all. So just trying to give back in some little way, I guess. But no, we'll see how it goes. Really, I'm not used to getting questioned. Don't know if there's a lot to give, but
you're getting some good feedback on your podcast. So what are you giving to people in that show with the way you ask questions of your guests? Must be reaching somebody.
Yeah, I'm just inquisitive. I think one of my customers once called me a really flattering term, a knowledge slag, which was nice. So I just find myself getting fascinated and asking more and more questions. So yeah, I think I prefer being on that side anyway.
Well, I was mentioning to you in our pre-show that I chatted with Phil White, who was the co-founder of Cervelo Bikes, and he said that one of the secrets to their success was to ask the right questions, to ask questions and ask the right questions of the customers, and that's what enabled them to be late entrants into the cycle market and yet become a dominant force.
Yeah, absolutely. It's easy if you're fascinated, though, about what you're talking about, isn't it? Especially about the person you're talking with. So if you're a brand owner and you're talking to... That's actually the reason why you, as a brand owner, you'd be successful, if you're listening to your consumers and your customers and stuff like that. Whereas a lot of people just think that their opinion's what everyone will want, and they put that out there. So they tend to be the ones that don't do as well.
Well, don't you think the recent situation with coronavirus has probably highlighted some companies that actually don't listen to the customers and just do what they want? So they're like, this is the way we're doing it. No, I know you think that, but this is the way we're doing it. And it'd be interesting to see which of those companies actually start to struggle once the world returns to some sort of normality.
I think they're the ones that are struggling. The bit for like the brands that we work with, what's been amazing, just they all believe they're entrepreneurial. And in the main, I think every one of them is. But the feedback from speaking with the customers at the moment is the ones that saw... When COVID came, there was this term like pivoting, everyone pivoting really quickly and all this kind of stuff. But the ones that then suddenly went, there's a lot of brands that have been going through retailers and things like that. And a lot of the brands have been able to now go direct to consumers. And the bit they love about that is by going direct to the consumers and using social media a lot more, you get to actually talk directly to the customer and ask them exactly what they want. And you start building that community like you got with SWOT and things like that, and suddenly you're getting live feedback, not what you think they want to hear from you, either yourself or from speaking with buyers and things like that. So loads of opportunities, actually.
Makes me wonder about, you know, some in the airline industry, or, you know, in our particular leisure time pursuit down of triathlon and Ironman, you hear people saying, well, I'd like a refund for my Ironman race being cancelled or deferred, and I don't want to be automatically placed in next year. And Ironman are saying, no, these are the rules, no refunds. Now, are they big enough to be able to ride over that, or will that come back to haunt them in the future when people think, well, do you know what, if this just race doesn't happen, I won't get a refund, you know?
Super hard, isn't it? That's when your own values and ethics kick in, I think, because you can definitely understand why they're doing it, because they're just desperate to keep their own brand surviving and coming out the other side. So they were to give refunds all the time, but I suppose it depends on the volume that you can do and the amount of people that are seeking these refunds, but you can't control. If it wasn't many, you'd be inclined to do it, wouldn't you? Because of the press and the PR on the back of it would be really positive, as opposed to the negative. But if everyone wanted a refund, then there probably would be no brand left, which is a massive juggling act. I don't envy people in that situation at all. It's like the CrossFit situation. Okay, well, that's just a nightmare how you're trying to juggle through that and ride that minefield.
Yeah, well, it does make me think that, you know, for instance, Outlaw did a U-turn in terms of their refunds. Whereas Challenge Roth managed to tell people who weren't getting a refund and get everybody to put $90 in or €90 in the pot for next year.
Oh, is that what they did?
Yeah. And, you know, maybe, but then Ironman have just had a flat no refunds, just deferrals or, you know, rescheduling. But you wonder whether that's got something to do with the number of layers of people between the customer and the top echelon of management that are making the decisions. Outlaw, you know, I know Ian Hamilton personally, and I know that he's still very much involved with it because it was his baby, whereas Andrew Messick, who I also know reasonably well, is the CEO of a big company who has shareholders, not to say Ian doesn't, and investors, but he's probably more removed from customer, and they're a big enough organization to have a wall of people to deflect that criticism.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the smaller ones can definitely act differently. I think they know it's all about that. Who owns Ironman now? I get confused with it.
It was Wanda Holdings, but they've had their own problems because they're in cinemas, and of course nobody's been going to the cinema, certainly not in China for several months now. So they sold out to a company called Advance, which is a private equity company based in the US, and interestingly has one of the senior players there was involved with Providence Equity, who were the people who owned Ironman before they sold it to Wanda.
Yeah. So when you've got the private equity involved, they're definitely at arm's length, aren't they? So when you try, I wouldn't want to be in that position, trying to manage upwards from that side while you're trying to protect a brand and everyone else on the other side. That must be such an impossible position to be in.
Well, let's chat a little bit more about you, Dan. So, we used to work together. I was your coach for a couple of years, and you would remember that all of our sessions had a warm-up. This is not going to be any different. I sent you these through just to give you a bit of prep because some of them do put you on the spot a little bit. So let's say you're coming on the stage here, Dan. You're coming in. If this was a TV show and you're walking on the stage now, I've asked you if you want a signature tune to announce your arrival. So what have you chosen to accompany you on the stage?
I've been racking my brains as to a theme tune to walk onto. Absolutely really struggling. Do you know, the one that always got me going, I think it was before I approached you, when someone suggested about doing a triathlon, then we looked at the Ironman, and it was, there's the video on YouTube, which is like the precursor, the sales blurb about anything is possible with the Ironman. I think it's the script, isn't it? I can't even remember what the song is now. Oh, I would start singing it, but that's going to be quite embarrassing. I think it might be a champion or something like that it's called. But yeah, it's that one. Because that actually, every time I watch, it talks about you could be the greatest, you can be the best, and believing in yourself and all that. And I definitely get that. But from watching the video, and every time I watch the video with that song, it always gives me goosebumps, actually. So
who do you think, are you saying the band is called The Script?
Yeah, it's definitely called The Script, yeah.
We can do a Google search while we're chatting and get the right one. I think with you, Dan, Black Eyed Peas, Let's Get This Party Started would be a good one for you.
Is it? Oh, okay, then. There you go. I could have thrown in some crazy one. Push It by Salt and Pepper. There you go. A bit of a 90s throwback.
Yeah. And so, talking of things that get you going then, and I know you're right into the mindset stuff, what's your favourite motto that you tend to try and live your life by?
It was make time or make excuses. Is unbelievably, I've got the website actually for that one. I used to get really frustrated with people that would always be saying, how do you fit it in, et cetera, et cetera, and I don't have any time for that. Then you're like, seriously, so you've got no kids. When you get and you don't have a hobby as such, you get home from work, and what is it you do? Well, I have to cook myself some dinner. Well, that might take half an hour to an hour. So that's like 7 or 6 o'clock. And, well, then I'll do the washing. It's not like an old washboard or anything like that. You put your washing on. So that might take 10 minutes or something along those lines. It's then what are you doing? And I just get frustrated when people say they don't have time, when I genuinely believe everyone's got a lot of time. There's a guy called Gary Vee. I don't know if you've seen him. But
Gary Vaynerchuk, yeah.
Yeah, I think we talked about this the other day, actually. And he got called out. He's always talked about people wasting time watching Netflix. And I watch loads of Netflix, so it's not about that. But then equally, I'd never say I don't have time. So, and that was his point. So he was talking about Netflix quite a lot and people saying they haven't got the time as well. And someone said, well, you can spend a whole day watching the Jets. I think that's his team that he's really passionate about. And he's like, no, that's fine. But I never once say to anyone that I don't have time to do something. You'll never hear me moaning like that. Equally, there's nothing wrong with Netflix or anything like that, providing you're not someone that's watching loads of Netflix and moaning about not having the time to do a load of other stuff. So that's kind of where I am with that one, really. So yeah, make time or make excuses. Apparently, I couldn't trademark because it was to trademark that motto because it was too inflammatory and it was too much of a call to action. So
really,
currently appealing that.
Inflammatory in what way?
You're essentially calling everyone lazy, which I think there's some brands which is like HTFU, isn't it? Like hard the fuck up or something like that. I've seen those doing the rounds and. Maybe, I don't know really, but yeah, the letter I got back when that was a decline, so you can appeal, so I'm appealing that one.
So what about just do it that Nike use then? Isn't that sort of similar?
Really similar, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, hence the appeal.
Yeah. Yeah. Mind you, I suppose Nike have got a little bit more money in the coffers than you and I have to appeal it, haven't they?
I think it was only about 150 quid. Yeah, the appeal probably cost a bit more, I don't know.
I'm interested in trademarking. How much does it cost to trademark a phrase?
You can do it on the government website. I can't remember offhand. I was just helping Michelle. She's trademarking something. I think from memory, I think it was about £150. I might be wrong. But the process itself wasn't hard. It's just I got it back and I need to appeal it. I haven't got that going through at the moment. But it's just frustrating.
Yeah, I like that. Make time or make excuses. That's good. Yeah. Yeah. Did you say you've got the website? Well, we'll put a link to it on there. Yeah, we'll put a link to it.
Actually, I started dabbling around. It's the same with when I created Triathlete Life a few years ago. It was I wanted to see what the crack was with sharing blogs that I didn't have to write myself, but could get. So I started just trying little things like that. So just to see how easy it would be to do stuff. So I ended up just like acquiring a couple of different websites just to see what you can do with them, and trialing things like drop shipping just because I get a little bit bored. So I thought I'd try that. That's why I set it up. So I think that if you went to the website now, I think there's just a couple of really dated blogs that I'd shared on that. But I think I might be turning it into a clothing site or something like that in the next few years.
You sound like very much a go-ahead character, Dan. Is there anything you're afraid of or that scares you?
Mediocrity, actually, probably. you know, when you just look back thinking, oh, I didn't really do much, or I could have done better. That I don't sit still for very long. So, and my brain's always whizzing. So I think it would be scared of looking back thinking, oh, I didn't really do much with my life, or I could have done this. And then looking back and regretting not just trying something or doing something, that tends to be, other than that, no, I don't think there's anything I'm scared of doing. Through my career, I've taken jobs where I didn't really know what I was doing prior to taking the job and then giving that a crack. And clearly when we started speaking, I couldn't swim, so I thought I'd give an Ironman a crack. No, so just settling is what really frustrates me, actually, and probably scares me. So that's probably why I don't sit still.
The question I've started asking myself and other people who said they're afraid is like, well, what's the worst that could happen if you try it? What's the worst that could happen, really?
Fail. That's actually the worst that could happen, and you might be a bit embarrassed.
Yeah.
But then you learn from it, and then you could probably do it again better in the next time. So, no, I don't. I was interviewing someone the other day, and she was saying she actually has some regrets, and that would be, you know, when you're younger. And this is what I'd encourage everyone to be doing. In your late teens, early 20s, even early 30s, and you haven't got these commitments, that's the time to just throw caution. Because then what is the worst? You're probably renting somewhere, and you may have the back where you could go and live back home for a bit if it all went terribly wrong. But they're the years where you can literally just go crazy, especially now with the internet and stuff like that. If you've got any idea, I'd just crack on with it, to be honest, and just learn about stuff while you're going, no matter what that might be.
Well, I often think, you know, if everything was taken away from me tomorrow, I've probably got enough friends who'd put me up for a few nights so I could live somewhere. I've got my own two legs, which are in pretty good shape, so I can walk to a lot of places, and I could, you know, I wouldn't be a first to get in public transport as long as I'm wearing my mask.
Yeah, exactly.
So getting around, and I could ride around most places on my bike, so getting around wouldn't be any problem. And then, you know, so the concrete effects of what I've accumulated over my life might have disappeared, but I've still got all this stuff that's in my head, all the knowledge I've acquired, all the contacts that I've acquired. And Jesus, you know what it's like when you're up against it and you have to hustle? You can make things happen, can't you, when you're desperate?
Especially now, there's so many opportunities. I saw the other day where there's someone on, like, especially things like TikTok. There's a lad on TikTok, he goes into some shops like Sports Direct and things like that, and buys all these trainers at discount prices, like 2-for-1s and things like that. And then he'll go on eBay and he'll sell them, and he's literally doubling the money. So there's little things like that that you can be doing. So nothing, the failing bit doesn't really, certainly doesn't scare me. It's definitely what drives me. That's the flip side. I suppose that's the whole, you either run from danger, don't you, or run to pleasure. One of those two things,
Like if you're a Navy SEAL, you run into danger.
They're unique in themselves, aren't they?
Yeah, but Dan Kennedy. I mean, I think when we first started, you know, I shared with you that I'd followed Dan Kennedy's learnings, and he was always like, if everybody else is running this way, you go the other way, because you want to take your own path rather than follow a well trodden one.
Yeah, most definitely. That's what a Navy SEAL is. One of the guys there is the one that got me into reading. Actually, it was Mark Divine, The Unbeatable Mind. Michelle used to, Michelle's my ex-wife, but she was on a certain path at the time and would always be saying, you've got to read these books, you've got to read these books. And I had no interest in reading any of these books. And then for some reason, I ended up buying, I think I'd been listening to a podcast with him on, actually, and it really fascinated me. So I bought his book, and then that was a game changer, because I learned so much more about Navy SEALs at that point. They're really spiritual, really into meditation. Almost, they can get into a state of flow. They can slow their brains down. I mean, you saw that change me probably actually during even my training and my approach to things. And that was a game changer. Suddenly I read that book. And then since then, I'd never put a book down. It's just been a snowball. And then coincidentally, all the books that Michelle was recommending I read, I've read all those now. So my life went like this. And then it's interest to come back. But yeah, it's insane. But yeah, the Navy SEALs are phenomenal.
There's a guy called Jesse Itzler. You heard of him?
No.
He's an entrepreneur, but he lived with a Navy SEAL for 30 days. He's got a book called Living with a Navy SEAL, which is, I think he lived with Dave Goggins, actually, or he spent...
That wouldn't be that laid back, would it?
Would not, no. Yeah, anyway, that was quite interesting, living with a Navy SEAL.
Did you read, have you read the David Goggins book?
No.
It Can't Hurt Me, I think it's called, isn't it?
No, I haven't. I've heard people can. And Dave Goggins is an interesting character, isn't he? Because all of the stuff that he talks about stems from, you know, basically child abuse, doesn't it? You know, the way his father used to treat him. And it's what's very interesting is that there are definitely some there are some studies which have shown that a lot of elite athletes have traumatic incidents in their lives at childhood that have shaped the way they are.
Yeah.
So they've either had something like that, you know, they've had the loss of a cherished one, a loved one, you know, parents, brother, and best friend in a traumatic. They've been bullied at school. All of those things that cause them to sort of work harder to prove themselves, if you like. Yeah. And that's what drives them on, really. And I guess Dave Goggins is one of those. Because, you know, if you've got a Navy SEAL, you're really looking at somebody who's in terms of mindset and physical fitness, is the very top, like an Olympic athlete. They're the top 0.1%, aren't they?
Yeah, it's how he got himself to that case. I think that's a bit that fascinates me. I'm actually not into this whole, used to be a bit more, but like every day, blah, 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 full throttle, blah, blah, blah. But I love him. But the bit that's always fascinated me is, I can't remember what percentage it might be, but it was always when you think you're done, you're probably at like 65% or whatever it is. I can't remember. So you're like, you're nowhere near. And that bit always resonates. They're like the takeaways I take from his stuff. But you're nowhere near spent when you think you're spent.
Yeah, very true. So this lack of fear, this sort of motto about making time for excuses, would that shape the sort of animal you would choose to be if you were part of the animal kingdom? What animal would you choose to be?
I quite like the wolf, actually, if you were to try and put you into a... I quite like the loyalty, and I quite like the fact that they're tenacious and pretty much relentless. A wolf. But then equally, I quite like the playfulness of things like dolphins and all that kind of stuff. So
I wrote down dolphin here. I know about your sort of fondness for
swimming ability.
Not just that, but you were into surfing and kite surfing, weren't you, before? So
I love water sports.
Yeah, dolphins. Oh, I got that half right then.
Yeah, that'd be odd. Half dolphin, half wolf.
That'd be an interesting animal. You mentioned there that you do a lot of reading. What was the last book you read?
I've got into a habit now. I tend to have a couple on the go at the same time, but the one I'm reading at the minute is one called Titan, which is about John D. Rockefeller and his life, which is insane, actually. It's just going through his upbringing and his childhood at the moment, and he's and his path with that one. So yeah, that's pretty cool. But the last book I finished was one by a guy called Simon Sinek, which is Leaders Eat Last.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. And then an audio book, again, I've got a few. I'm actually listening to two audio books as well. Ray Dalio, which is Principles, which is great, and that's really more from a work environment, and it's a big book. And then just from a bit of more of a downtime about your brain firing is one by Stephen Fry called Heroes, which is a follow-up to Mythos. So it's like Greek heroes and all that kind of stuff, which is, that's pretty cool. But I've always been fascinated by things like that. And actually, another one that I like picking up and putting down, which is always in my bag, especially when I'm traveling with work and things like that, is Tiny. But it's Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, like the bit Stoics and all that kind of stuff. But that's an interesting one. That was, I don't know if you know Marcus Aurelius, he was the Roman emperor, and he's in the movie Gladiator. But he essentially was writing down, he wrote a diary with no intention of ever getting out to anyone else of it. So it's like his own personal private musings, and Stoicism is something that fascinates me. Big fan of Ryan Holiday.
That's the second time in a week that I've heard that book mentioned, which is quite interesting. I think I've created this High Performance Human Facebook page now, and I've been inviting people to it. And we were talking about being in your sweet spot, which is something we'll come to in a minute. And somebody referred to that whole meditations book as a way of helping them to ground them and bring them back into the sweet spot.
Brilliant. I know the people, like when I've been on the underground and you see people reading, and people take a lot of comfort in certain books, right? So you can see people reading the Bible, and it doesn't matter really what tube you're on. You can always see someone just leafing. And it's not a book that they're probably not turning to a specific page. They're just like reading the same stuff. But there's it's such a small little book. And there's just, whenever you're reading something, it just seems to always be something that you can identify with at that moment in time. I just find it fascinating. And the Stoics, that was the first one I looked at. And then by reading Ryan Holiday's books, a couple of my favourite books, actually, The Ego is the Enemy and Obstacle is the Way, are two incredible books. And I read Ego is the Enemy a couple of years ago, which is just like keeping yourself in check, remaining humble, you know, acting with humility and all that kind of stuff, and trying not to react to certain situations. And then The Obstacle is the Way is a book that I'd had for a while, and started reading that just at the point COVID-19 kicked in. So suddenly you're just looking at every opportunity. And actually, when something comes up which feels like it's really hard, that's probably a big sign that that's the direction you've got to head in and go for it. It's kind of like the bit when you're training and if you want to get quicker, you're going to have to go through that period where it's going to hurt and get a bit painful. And then that's how you get quicker. Same with building muscles in the gym. It's when your fibres are breaking down, isn't it? So that's probably the best way of looking at it. But Stoicism, I find really fascinating. All that stillness and looking at things, just being humble. I recommend those books highly. And Ryan Holiday breaks it down so eloquently and in a way that it's easy to understand. He's done all the legwork by going through all these like philosophers, Seneca and Marcus Aurelius, Epictetus, I think, is another one. And he just does all this studying and reading and just brings out a book which just summarizes it all and makes it a bit easier to read. So, yeah. Can't remember how we got onto that though. But Leaders Eat Last by Simon Sinek's amazing. If you're in probably in sport where you're leading a team or something like that, or a coach, or in business, it's just another way of looking at it, I suppose. It's not that old school rule by the iron fist and all that. It's about this collective and empathetic leadership styles, which seems to be the best way of doing stuff at the minute.
Interestingly, Simon Sinek's other book, I can't remember what the exact title is, but it's all about your reason why you do things.
Start with why.
Start with why. I think that's been particularly relevant for, you know, in Ironman, in triathlon, there's been no races. So in March, everybody's ambitions and sort of enthusiasm for the year was just completely wiped out because races were cancelled. And what was interesting was you talk about stoicism and you talk about resilience and all of those things that you'd expect to be a requirement for taking on an endurance event like an Ironman, seemed to desert a lot of people once they found out that their races were off, and they were saying, well, you know, what's the point in training now? What am I going to do? Why? I've got nothing to train for. So why carry on? But of course, if the reason why you do stuff is because going out for a run in the woods enables you to meditate, enables you to clear your head, because you just enjoy the discipline of getting up each morning and going and doing something physical before you start your working day. If you enjoy riding your bike because you just like seeing the countryside and you just like to feel the wind in your hair and you know, putting in a bit of effort, then you don't need to have a race to prepare for. It's just something you do, like brushing your teeth. And yeah. And that's, I think, probably knowing you, that's the way you train, because you like training, and having a race at the end of it is just a way of expressing that fitness and seeing what your body's capable of and seeing what your mind's capable of. And I've recommended that book, Your Reason Why, to a lot of people, because when I could see them on Facebook saying, well, what shall I do now? It's like, well, just go back to the reason why you started doing all this stuff in the first place.
Yeah, no, definitely. I definitely fell into the going back to the triathlon and the training. I've got a goal. I've always had it, and I'm definitely going to keep pursuing it. But that goal was then absolutely consuming me from signing up to races quickly and, you know, getting ahead of myself. And it was taken over so much so that then I was beating myself up when my swimming felt like it was plateauing. But one thing, I could never stop my training because I needed the training, because actually when you were talking about running through the woods and meditating, the training keeps me sane with everything else that goes on around my life. And it's that one big, it's the constant that it's kind of like I'm in control. If I know what I, it doesn't matter what comes up, I'm going to do my run, I'm going to do my swim, I'm going to do my bike, and nothing gets in the way of doing those things. And I can choose if I don't want to do it. Something doesn't come, you know, it's a choice. But with the swimming, it was all getting a bit on top of me, but I couldn't not do it for the reason I just described. But when I just sat back, and I thought, I can't remember how it happened. I think it was literally one evening, as you know, it was a morning during when I was meditating, and I don't know why it happened. The penny just dropped, and I just took pressure off myself. And I still got the goal, but I didn't have a time so much in mind. And then afterwards, I was just writing down some bits about the swimming, and I decided, oh, I'm just going to go and get a coach, actually, because I just need. Swimming, I've always found a bit funny. It was easier when I was going to play, like John Charles, you've got these sets and everything else that's going on. But relying on other people in the lane quite so much wasn't as easy. So with Tom now coaching, like he's very specific and prescriptive with a run and with a bike. But my swimming just felt a little like I was a bit lost with the whole thing. And then suddenly I got the coach and she was just chatting to me. And suddenly it clicked again. I was loving the process. I can really see the process on the bike and I can really see it on the run, but the swimming was just all over the place. So getting live feedback on that sort of stuff every day, I suddenly got the spark back for that, and everything else just went on and went on again. And I can really start seeing progress again now. So that was a good thing. But needing to understand why I was doing it was actually fundamental. Not just the why for me doing it is because I've said I'm going to do this and now I've just got to keep doing it regardless. That wasn't the case. So it was quite nice with that realization.
As you made an interesting point there about how it completely took over and consumed you. And I want to come back to that. I call that the sweet spot. And one of the things I've recognized about high performance humans is that they do have a sweet spot. They can get out of that sweet spot because they do get, you know, consumed by one thing, but they have an ability to recognize when they're at the sweet spot a lot of the time and be able to balance it. But let's hone in on your business life to a point, Dan, because you're the managing director of Orion now. I remember when we first met that you had this ambition to be there and you were sort of still going for it, and now you've achieved that point. But what how have you got to that point? You know, how do you start out in business when you left school? Or were you already an entrepreneur at school, buying sweets and then dividing them up and selling them in packets and making a profit?
No, there was definitely an element of that, because I grew up in a pub, so I was around like a business day in, day out, and you could see what was going on. But I wouldn't say I was an entrepreneur at school. All my school was just all literally revolving around sport, essentially. That was really what it was. I was never that academic, to be honest. It was just sport. One thing that I've reflected on was whenever I've joined a football team, I've never been the best footballer, but somehow I ended up being the captain of every football team that I've played for. And that's only something that came, like, I've actually really been aware of probably about a couple of years ago. So there's definitely like a leadership element that comes of it. But I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And then I decided I wanted to go to university because only my family had done that. So Jerry Maguire was out at the time. It had just been released. So I decided I was going to go to university and do sports science and marketing because I just wanted to have a glamorous life as a sports promoter. I've always liked the idea of selling and talking to people. So I always liked bar work and being around people and growing up in a pub. You definitely talk to different age groups and things like that. So that's never bothered me. So I quite liked the idea of doing something like that. So I went to uni, had a great time, but just got in with the wrong crowd at the wrong time. And all I was doing was playing sport, liking marketing, but drinking heavily and doing recreational drugs, which wasn't great at the time. And then finished the first year, went into the second year, realized I was in way too much debt, decided it wasn't going to be the right idea, so I decided to quit. And then, so how old was that, 19? And then I had the weirdest 2 years. I just couldn't hold it down a job. I was just bumming around, not doing anything. And then I got to about 21 and thought, oh no, I've got to do something. So I went to work in a call center environment, but it wasn't this call center. It was like a networking environment, a help desk, if you like account management. And then I did well there for 6 months, and the sister company in London approached me to go and work for them potentially. And it was doubling the money, literally going from Ramsgate to London. So I thought, oh, that's a good opportunity. Then I moved to London for a couple of years doing that, got promoted there to be in like the senior in this account management team. And then my mate was in this industry. He was a sales director at another manufacturer. And he said, look, I've got a couple of difficult customers. Do you want to come and work for me? You're really good at what you're doing. And I went, you don't know if I'm good at what I'm doing. I just tell you that I'm good at what I'm doing. And he went, well, I believe you, so come and work for me. So I went to join that company, and he sold it to me. It was going to be like, it's been behaving badly. We were going to live in the same house, go out, party. And actually, it was the worst of every world, because I was working for him. We'd go home and he'd still want me working for him. And I was like, no, this isn't going to work. Then he met someone. We moved in with her briefly. That wasn't really working out for me. So I got my own place. He then left the company. And then, so at that point in York, that's when I moved up to Yorkshire, and I was thinking, oh, should I go back down to London, or should I see this out? So I decided just to apply myself, push myself in that company. And that's when everything started changing. So that was about, I was about 23 or 24 by that point, and then just started progressing within that company. And that company was Harman Personal Care, then was sold, became Hallam Beauty, then became Abel Limited. And during that time, I'd gone from customer service, planning, account management, senior account management, commercial manager, senior commercial manager. And then 7.5 years ago, Orian, another local manufacturer I'm at now, they approached me to join this business as a sales director. And that was it, really, with a view to becoming the managing director one day. And then that happened 18 months ago.
So you've stood in the shoes of most of those roles, haven't you? So when your staff say you don't know what it's like, you probably do know what it's like, actually.
I know exactly what it's like. That's why it's really, but other people that join the business, they don't know that I've done most of these roles already. But yeah, so you've got a level of empathy. You know what it's like to be doing it. So you can understand when they're getting frustrated. Equally, I know how frustrating it is to be working for someone that's done that job and getting frustrated with them telling you they know best and how to do it. So I desperately try not to fall into that camp, but I am really guilty of doing that exact same thing at times. So trying to back away, but it's easier said than done. But no, that's kind of how I've ended up in business and this industry, because clearly I'm not a big advocate for health and beauty from appearances.
Well, your beard looks fairly well kempt, Dan. It's not as untidy. It's not as untidy as some that I've seen over lockdown.
No, that's because I shaved it by accident during lockdown. I forgot to put an attachment on the clippers, and then ended up taking it right down to stubble. Of which, Rain, you know, my youngest one, he jumped behind the sofa when I came downstairs, and he was just shouting out, "I don't like it! I don't like it!" And Bear just looked at me and went, "No, Dad, I want the beard back." And that was it, because I don't think they've ever seen me without it.
So you business is obviously a big part of your life. You've talked about your triathlon and your sport. You did mention that Michelle, your ex, and you've mentioned Bear and Rain there. Can you give us a little bit of an insight into that personal side of your life and what sort of time that takes up? Because I'm just trying to get a sense of the sort of plates that you have to spin and balance to keep your life rolling along.
Yeah, sure. So quick background on so Michelle, where I'm at now. So me and Michelle, I think, were together for about 10 years, and our lives just started going in separate directions, really, different interests, and we were growing apart. So we agreed to separate. She was super supportive of everything I was always doing with these triathlons and everything else and with business, but Michelle was definitely of the opinion that business became before her, which really wasn't the case, but I could definitely see how that came across. I just wanted to give everything into my business and then into the sport that I was doing. And sometimes it just feels like people are at certain priorities, isn't it? But and then we had two boys. So Bear's now 8 and Rain's just turned 3. And Michelle and I separated almost 2.5 years ago now, but we've remained really good friends, which is cool. So unfortunately enough, we went down a route. We wanted to go into homeschooling. So I say it's fortunate.
it's fortunate so much that so Michelle facilitates what the boys do every day. So she doesn't sit down with them at a desk and take them through a curriculum, but she'll take them to different groups like Forest School, Incredible Farm, parkour, gymnastics, football, rugby, tennis, you know, art classes, science, anything that comes up that they've got an interest in. So she does that. So the beautiful thing in this is at an end of a day, we don't have to worry about this weekend split that a lot of people have when they separate. So I get to see my boys every evening. So when I get home from work, I see them between the hours of 6 and 8-ish. That's every evening. And then I have them every weekend from Friday evening till Sunday afternoon. And we're probably going to take that through to Monday morning. So that's great. But and I love spending time with them. And actually, it's amazing. So every evening, no matter what's going on at work, I have to leave it at the door because, or leave it in the car when I'm getting out because they will not let me think about work for 1 second, which is great. So it means I'm forced to switch off from it, whether I wanted to or not. So that's been a great discipline. But because, and I'd never compromise on the time I spend with them. And you know that anyway, you know that better than anyone from everything I've always done with them. So what that does do is that starts condensing down the days all around you. So if you think, I work 9 to 5, 9 to 6 or 8 to 6, around those hours. And then I see the boys between 6 and 8 or 6:30, 8-ish every single day. And at weekends, it's really taken up with them. So I've got to try and fit the training in around there and everything else I want to do. So the days tend to start with getting up around 5-ish. And that's when I do the meditating, reading or journaling and planning. I've got quite a strict morning routine, actually, which gets me through that. Then I tend to, before COVID-19, I'd be leaving the house to drive to the swimming pool, swim 7 till 8, get out of the swimming pool, have something to eat, and then get to the office for 8:30, 9 o'clock, work for the full day, get home, see the boys, get home, do my evening training, which would tend to be anywhere between hour and a half, a little bit more maybe when you're building up to an event, but it doesn't tend to be more than an hour and a half during the week, the working week. So that can take you through to 9, 10 o'clock, and then I try and eat something and then go to bed. So I try and read or do something before going to bed. But then at weekends, I have to wake up early in the morning because I can't go out and do a long ride because I can't leave the boy, 8 and 3-year-old, in the house on their own. So I've got to do that training in the house. So I've got to get a 3-hour ride in, it's getting up to about 4 hours at the moment, and then an hour and a half or 2-hour run, something along those lines. So I have to have the early mornings again, but I'm using the Sunday afternoons at the moment as a long ride if I want to go outdoors, which is pretty cool. So it doesn't leave much time for anything else because during the weekend, I then want to play with them and do what they want to do during the days. And Bear's clearly into his CrossFit, and then Rain's really into going down the park and doing stuff. And then there's Fortnite. So I'm learning to play Fortnite with Bear at the moment and doing all that sort of stuff. So it's quite structured. And without the structure, I definitely wouldn't be able to get through that working day. But the other thing, when you're in the job that I'm in, especially when it was in the sales role, you've got to have ways of connecting with other people. So I'm always fascinated about what they do, but I've always been keen on knowing what's going on with Netflix and things like that. So I don't think there's a series I'm watching, or I don't think there's something that you talk about that I haven't watched other than Game of Thrones. I've never watched one episode of that, so I'm definitely in the minority. But you've watched that as well, or you haven't watched it?
I've watched Game of Thrones. I was in that up until Christmas. I was in that category of Game of Thrones. I'm not watching that. And then several people that I knew that I didn't think would be into it said, "Have you watched Game of Thrones? It's really good." So I got into it, and it was like 3 episodes before I was addicted. Probably because the first, like most people notice, the first few episodes were just like watching an orgy.
It was
like either watching a great big brawl or watching an orgy. You know, there was either fighting and killing or sex.
The only reason I haven't watched it is it's not on Amazon Prime or Netflix. So essentially, like, they're the two that I subscribe.
No, you can get it on Amazon Prime. You just have to pay for it.
I paid
for it, and by then I was hooked. So you know, you pay the first one's free, and then the next set of episodes are like second series was like £9, and then the next series is £24. But by then I was in hooked.
Yeah, it'll be on them that day. But so to try and find ways of connecting with these people, I need to make sure I'm keeping up to speed. So fortunately, when I, because I do all my training in the house, with exception to the swimming, I get to be able to watch Netflix and do all that while I'm doing my training at the same time. So it tends to just be on in the background, but you're getting the gist of stuff. So yeah, that's pretty much how I max it out. And then I read, like I just said, in the morning and evenings, and then I listen to a lot of audiobooks on my commute to the swimming pool, to getting back, and when I'm on the bike or when I'm running. So I get to get through a lot of books.
You've outlined what sounds like your perfect week there, right? I guess there isn't, with work and family life and your training and obviously finding the opportunity to recharge and refuel and get ready to go again the next day, there isn't a great deal of wiggle room. So there's a couple of points. In previous conversations I've had with people who are fulfilling similar roles to you, you know, I call them the high performance humans. One of the similarities I've noticed is that they've removed most of the fluff from their lives. Now, you talked about watching Netflix and Gary Vee and that whole justification for watching that. And I guess that's not fluff for you, but certainly you've not mentioned social media a great deal. I know you used to do a lot of stuff on Instagram, but that's dropped off a lot now. I know you said you were running those websites, but I don't see much of that now. So I guess that's the fluff that you've had to sort of push to the side in order to enable you to do the other stuff. Being organized and planning your week, or having a structure and, you know, having anchor points, like, you know, you get up in the morning, you've got to get up at this time. And if you work back from, I must be up at 5, and I need to get 7 hours sleep, so therefore I must be going to sleep at this time. That sort of fixes a certain number of things in place around which you've got to move everything else, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I ended up getting a different when I first split up with Michelle, we were working with one another in triathlon, and then I got another coach at the time, which was like a kind of, coincidentally, like a high performance life coach, if you like. And it was at that point, there's a guy called Nii Shobo. He's an ex-NFL player, and he did a sports motivational podcast, it was called, and Get Your Mind Right. And I remember the day that Michelle and I agreed we were going to separate, and I was walking out the house, I was listening to it, and he was announcing that he had vacancies for his coaching, and I was like, oh, I'm just going to do it. So just went home and signed up, paid the money to work with him. But that was the introduction to a book. So is that he was actually pivotal to this turning point. But all his stuff all stems around routine, morning routines. And as coming back to this Navy SEAL, everyone's seen the YouTube video where the guy says, first thing you do, make your bed, like you've accomplished straight away. So tick, your day has got to get on the right path because you've done something that you wanted to do and you've succeeded. And it's a kind of like that little piece, really, isn't it? So yeah, the morning routine. And but for me, that was great. So it was definitely getting the structure. But for me, what happened with that was I was doing it, and that was instrumental in getting me to think differently. But that was breaking down your day to every 30 minutes, what you were doing with it. And then I was finding myself getting anxious and stressed that I wasn't having, that I hadn't done my morning plan, and I wasn't finding the time to actually write it down. And so it was far from creating a sense of calm and certainty, it was just creating like this overwhelming sense of anxiety. So I had to reevaluate that. And so it's more just, rather than this real structured plan, it's more of a, well, rather than a real defined plan, it's more of a structure. And now working to that makes it work. So if I train a little bit later and it's 11 o'clock, it doesn't really matter. I'm not going to stress about getting into bed for 10 o'clock. But does that mean I could probably sleep in till 6? Definitely does at the moment with the lockdown, because the swimming pools aren't defined in times that I have to get things done by. So actually, it's just been great for me, just from a relaxing perspective. And actually, some of the training's actually really benefiting. I think that might be because I'm not having to get up to hit a certain class at a swimming pool at a certain time. So things have been a bit more flexible from there. But I think I can't imagine my life without that structure now. I wouldn't impose it on anyone else either, because I don't encourage everyone else to try and get through everything. And it's different personalities, isn't it? I'm not very good at relaxing.
I talked about Dan Kennedy. I listened to him once talking about how he scripted his life, and he describes what happens in the movie industry, where he says, like, Dan Williams walks onto the stage at 30 seconds into the scene, takes 15 seconds to get across to the middle, stopping for 10 seconds to deliver this line, and then exit stage right at, you know, something similar to that. And so he would script every part of his day, and he would allocate a time cost. So he would say, right, I need to have this meeting with Dan, and it's going to be a 30-minute meeting. So we need to start at 10 a.m. and we need to finish by 10:30. So I'm going to say to Dan when he comes in, hey, Dan, nice to see you. Just to let you know, I need to be off at 10:30, so we need to be prompt about this. So, you know, let's cut all the crap and just get straight down to business. And or you do the same when you've got a phone call. You know, you're going to ring somebody and you're going to say, well, we've got 10 minutes for this call because I've got another one coming up. Whether you have or you haven't, you tell people that, so it gives you a defined end as well. If you're writing a blog post or you're writing an article for something, you give it an hour and you say, right, I've absolutely got to be finished by an hour. Because if I'm not, then that impinges on something else. And so you work feverishly and you cut out all distractions. So there goes some of the fluff again. And that's, I've observed that one of the things that affects most people with the time management is there's just far too many distractions. The phone goes off, so they pick it up, see who's put a message on Facebook, as if that's going to make
it. That's why all notifications are off, other than phone call. Other than that, I still have the notifications on where you can see that you've got something, but there's never any sound and there's never a big, this is the message that's just come up. But you can see, you know, when you've got that little red number 1, 2, or 3, how many?
Yeah, no. I've stopped with those as well, because I think a lot of the time you're inquisitive. Oh, I wonder who that is. It's like if I was out running in the Dales, I wouldn't have any of that because there wouldn't be any phone signal. So I might have my phone with me because, you know, I might need it in emergency or I want to take a photograph of something, but I wouldn't be disturbed. And so, you know, people have come to expect instant responses, but I think you have to train people to not expect an instant response.
Well, just manage expectations, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah.
One thing about that planning your day, one thing I do is journal in the morning. And what that used to be was more of a how was yesterday. So I try and just do that briefly of an evening, or even just think from this gratitude perspective, like what I'm grateful for. It sounds a little bit woo-woo to some people, but I genuinely believe that practice is massive. But one thing is, when I journal in the morning, I try and always put, unless there's something I really, that's just coming to me and things like that, but I try and just talk about how I want my day to go and the things that I want to, but in the past tense. And interestingly, Hugh Jackman was talking to Tim Ferriss about this on his, and it's exactly the same thing. And I think this stemmed from, it wasn't me, it was someone else that's done it since. Someone was giving me advice to write the narrative as if the day had happened. So you've kind of set this intention and manifesting piece, if you like. And then you score it out of 10 just to see how you delivered on that day. And I've had days where it's been 0. You know, when things come up at work and you're like, wow, that has not gone in any way how I... Are you kind of making yourself accountable to how you think your day's going to go or how you want it to go? So that's just quite interesting. I like doing that.
The scripting thing is something that I've used for when you're doing an Ironman as well. And you could almost apply the same thing there. Is if I was to sit down afterwards and write down how the perfect day went, then this is how my race would go. I'd get up in the morning, I'd feel no nerves, and then they'd start to build, but I'd have some food, and then I'd go over what was going to happen in the race. And then you'd work it through to visualizing yourself coming across the finish line. And it always makes me wonder, well, you're in control of that. There are unplanned events that might happen, you know, a dog might run out on the course and you fall off your bike. You go over a speed bump and you lose your water bottles, you get a flat tire and, you know, it takes you long. But in the most... Most of the times you're actually in control of what happens in your race there, because you've been in control of the training you've done, and if you're realistic, you're in control of your expectations as to what might happen. So yeah. if somebody writes that script and then says to me, well, yeah, it didn't go at all like I planned. Well, what was it? Why didn't it go according to your plan? Was your plan unrealistic?
Or did you have a plan?
or did you actually have a plan? Yeah. And I think you know, going back to your right at the beginning when we talked about make time or make excuses, is if you intend to have a day like that, yeah, if one of your staff walks in the door now and says, Dan, one of the machines has exploded and, you know, we can't do this and it's emergency because we've got this big order to get out. You probably couldn't have foreseen that when you came to work in the morning. But other than that, the plan that you have for your day is very much in your control, unless you get it out of control by spending too much time chatting on this podcast with me, which then pushes something else back.
When you look at that, you can redo the plan. That's the beauty about having one in the first place. You can just adjust it when things happen. But I from when you told me about having a plan for racing, I think it might be with you and with Tom, this has happened. This is probably the reason why I do plan my working day a little bit more, because I know that it can't happen during my working day or not blowing like this. There's been a couple of races where, because I respect you both so much and you give me a plan or we work through a plan together, and this has happened to me on race day, so it's not like I've followed plans perfectly. The gun goes off and then the plan's gone out the window, or I'm just getting a bit carried away with racing and things go. So it's good having a plan. I definitely suggest that. It's even better if you can stick to your plan, isn't it? But sometimes you do go off. I mean, we're all human, aren't we? So we all make mistakes and things like that, but it's when you learn.
Well, that's. I mean, you mentioned a couple of things that have come up in previous podcasts. Actually, I made a comment about make your bed. That's William McRaven, Admiral William McRaven, and he was referred to in a previous podcast I did with Scott Jones, who is also an admiral from the Navy. Scott is a triathlete. He's an Ironman competitor, ferociously organized, just like you are. You know, you and him could be the same person chatting, except he doesn't have a beard, and you know, he's but that whole thing about scripting, but obviously in the military they also have a fondness for saying that no plan survives first for contact with the enemy. Now obviously when we're doing a triathlon, we're not going to a war situation, we are going into battle with the elements, and there's 1,000 other people around us or 2,000 people who could derail our day by doing, you know, coming out of transition and you've got somebody looking down at their shoes trying to put the foot onto the pedal, and they ride across into you and steer you into the, you know, you couldn't have planned for that. But then from that moment, then your plan's gone out the window and you have to reformulate and sort of get back on track, don't you?
Yeah.
So that brings me to, you've got this careful structure. It's based around essentially what I've understood from the conversation is it's based around work, your family, your training and rest. Yeah, those are the key four elements.
Yeah.
So what happens when your week gets out of balance? Yeah, as it will do occasionally. You know, you'll have a big project on at work, or you know, there might be one of the boys might have, you know, I've seen Bear doing all of his CrossFit. So let's say Bear falls over and breaks his arm doing some of his gymnastic stuff. So you have to take him to hospital, and you have to spend several hours waiting for him to have his to be seen to. What happens when your life gets out of balance? Are you mindful enough now to be able to recognise that and get it back on track?
Yeah, I have. I can get it back on track really quickly. Actually, if ever I'm feeling like I'm getting overwhelmed with anything, it's the meditating thing. But I do genuinely sit down and meditate. I love doing that. But again, going back to what you were saying about when you're running. Probably not so much when I'm cycling, but definitely when I'm running, that's when any issue that's come up with work, I think the meditating grounds me. The running is when every single solution, and I'm not exaggerating, I think it's been every time there's been a hard project or a hard negotiation or something like that, it's always been on the run. And it tends to be on an outdoor run more than anything. And that brings me back into balance. So although if it was out of whack and I had to find time, it would always, the first thing that would go wouldn't be the family, like my boys are everything. My work would then it would be the training, then it would be the work piece. But the running, I'd always have to try and keep going to some degree. But it would definitely be swimming and cycling, keep the running, because you have to keep that something up, because it just wouldn't work for me. You know, I can't remember what it is. You get this like a wheel where you've got health and wealth and all that. So you'd never want to strip one of the things away. You've got to keep something. But the amount of hours I put into training would have to be compromised. I've got a great team around me at work, so they'd understand if there was some big issues going on, and they're definitely people I can rely on heavily. So that would then go, and then my boys are like the non-negotiables. That said, I mean, I have to go down to London for meetings, and there's nights when I have to stay away, but or I have to go to the US and stuff like that, but we work through that. I FaceTime them still, and we go with that. But I can definitely, I can feel it. I can definitely sense when something's not going right, and I can adjust on it. It's like a micro balance. I can't begin to really describe. You know, if you spin a penny, and then all the time it's spinning, it looks like it's just beautiful. It's like spinning around. It's almost like a ball. And then slowly, when it starts slowing down, it gets this really weird little wobble going on. It's kind of like I feel that, and then you can kind of get yourself back onto where you need to be to get. I wouldn't say it's like spinning a plate; it's more like a coin.
Well, spinning plates is the analogy I use a lot. And I've talked about the key plates in your life. You know, I've got a video where you see this circus entertainer. Or he's on a variety show on the TV back in the 60s. You know, and you've got the crowd, and he gets the plate spinning, and then he starts doing some juggling. You know, and everybody's going, "Oh!" And then they're going, "Whoa, the plate!" So he runs back to the plate and he spins the plate, and then he comes back and he's carrying on. Then he goes, "Oh, I know, let's add another plate." So he spins the plates up, and then the other one's wobbling, so he gets them both going. And then he starts doing some more juggling, and then his beautiful assistant comes on, and she starts doing stuff. So he gets sidetracked, and then, "Oh, the place, the crowd start cheering. And so he rushes back. And of course it's all choreographed, and he's occasionally the plate smashes but we don't want in our own lives. We, you know, I mean, you and I have both been through relationship breakups. We've probably had other things that have happened in our life, which would be the equivalent of a plate smashing. And that's a lesson, and you learn from it, hopefully. Yeah. I think what's more likely to happen for most people is that plates start wobbling in the way you described with the penny, or the way I've described. I think the key, just to finish, Dan, sorry, is just the key is not that things wobbling is a problem, but recognizing they're wobbling and knowing how to pay attention to them to stop them wobbling and getting them back on track is a more important skill.
The only bit I used to always use that plate spinning example about spinning plates, and I've never referred to this coin example like I just said, but I think the reason why that I'm never going to mention this plate spinning again, and I'll always use a coin. And the only reason being, by talking about plate spinning, it feels like everything is independent and all these things are all over the place. But with this, the coin bit it's just the one thing, isn't it? So for me, that would be my life is that. And when it starts to wobble, that one coin is about to fall flat and stop spinning. That's when I need to sort some shit out and get it back on course. So I think that's probably why I'd leave that. It's just personally, I see everything visually in my head. So I think the coin spinning seems to be more appealing.
Well, that's okay. We can't both have the same analogy. I won't be using
your. I'm not trying to convince you mine's the right thing either. That's the beauty about opinions, isn't it?
I won't be using your make time, make excuses trademark thing. But, you know, I mean, somebody, we had this discussion about somebody said, I think it might have been Scott actually. Admiral Scott, he says, "I don't believe your life can be in balance. I think that's rubbish." And I'm not sure I agree with him, because I think, you know, you do the parkour stuff, you do your CrossFit, you've probably had a go with yourself and with Bear on the slacklining. You can get on the slackline, and as you get some practice, you can stay on it. But you're constantly having to adjust, aren't you? You can stay still for a little bit, then you're constantly having to adjust. Sometimes you fall off and you get back on. Yeah. And I think life is like that. And that will be like your penny going out of balance. You're on that tightrope. You can get into a sweet spot where you can stay still and feel, I've got this now. And then, bang, you're off. It's recognizing, I think that whatever analogy you use, it's being able to recognize when things are getting out of whack and having a strategy for getting them back on track. And I really like what you say there is, you know, if it was anything, running would be my strategy for getting it back on track, because I can just go out, I can meditate, there's no distractions. You're out in the where you live, you're probably out on the moors, I'm out in the woods, but you're out there with nature. And there's a certain rawness about that that gets you just to thinking about what you're doing.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I've found the same when I'm out running, And I've heard Alistair Brownlee talk about, you know, he doesn't meditate, but he does cycling for him is a way of sorting out his head and his brain and getting things in some sort of order.
Yeah, most definitely.
So it seems like most people have something, but I think the important thing is recognizing what it is and that you actually have created some sort of strategy for, yeah, that allows you to get your life back on track. I'm conscious of time now, Dan, but I just think, you know, it's been as we're chatting here now, we're at what appears to be not the end, but certainly a changing circumstances around the coronavirus outbreak. I'm interested to know what you've learned about yourself in the last few months and maybe some of the things that you've stopped doing, some of the things that you think, actually, I'm going to carry on doing that, and maybe some things that you've started doing that you'll do more of.
I think the standout is I've definitely always built myself as being positive, which has always come naturally. I'm definitely not a pessimist, but the optimism has just become really apparent just from networking with other people, other businesses and things like that. When I've been listening, and there's been times where we've been in groups of 20 or 30 people on these Zooms and listening to other business leaders and business owners and things like that, and just how they're trying to manage things and manage their team. It just seems their own fear is then being filtered down to a load of other people, whereas I'm quite the other way. Mine's always been about just sharing the optimism and building people up and bringing people and making people feel positive about every situation. And then from another business sense, it'll be just this collaborative approach and people coming together. Personally, I think, although I love training indoors, and it's kind of like I've been waiting for this moment all my life with the amount of training I do indoors, it just makes you appreciate the outdoors massively. So trying to get out and about at every opportunity. And I'd say one thing that has suffered from, and I can't wait for it to be lifted, because I got into sales because I like being around people. And I've literally always taken for granted that I've never had to go out my way to go and meet and catch up with people, because my work or my hobbies have always allowed it to happen. And I haven't been really good at this, actually, because of when you just said about your boys, your work, your family and everything else. One thing that has suffered has been my being the proactive one, engaging with friends and getting together with them. So I can't wait for this to be lifted, and there's a lot of people I'm going to go and visit and see and get back in touch with and make sure I do that a lot more. So that'll be finding the time. I'm just buying a new house, so I'll be inviting people around a lot more than I ever did, and just trying to accommodate that. But definitely that social connection is something that I've taken for granted.
Yeah, I made a conscious effort. It's because I'm like you, I'm a social type. We're probably quite similar in that outlook. And I made a conscious effort. I even made a list of people that I thought, right, I'm going to make an effort to ring these people who I haven't spoken to for a while, but I want to check in with them, make sure they're all right, you know, and check in with them on a regular basis. You know, like not like every week, but, you know, once or twice a month. So I think I probably rung everybody on that list at least once or twice during this lockdown and just to see how they're getting on. I've done a lot of Zoom calls and phone calls with those people. And I actually thought that would be good for my mental health. You know, you and I are sat here looking at Zoom, but it could be that where I put my computer, you could be sat opposite over the breakfast bar for me. I could be sat in your office, the other side of your desk, but it's not the same looking at a Zoom image of somebody as it is actually being in the same room. And I hadn't quite realized the significance of that until I was invited around to once the lockdown eased, some friends said, well, look, the weather's really nice. Do you want to come and sit in the garden? And we'll have a socially distanced pizza and a beer and just catch up. And I thought, well, we could just do that on a Zoom call. No, I went round and I felt like I was in a completely different mood.
It must be energy, mustn't it?
Yeah. And then, you know, when they said, well, you can go and cycle with one other person. And I thought, what's the point in that? There'll be 2 or 3 meters ahead of me. It'll be just like two independent people cycling along the same road. I can't be bothered. And then a friend said to me, do you want to go out for a ride one day? So I said, oh yeah, okay then. So I went out, and actually it did make a difference. We stopped and we found a coffee shop that was doing takeaway coffee. We sat there, you know, 2 meters apart, just chatting. And it's, it does make a massive difference having a physical entity in front of you to chat to. And like you, I think probably the things I'll cherish are if I get a chance to go out on a group ride on a weekend and it's pouring down with rain, most likely I'll think, do you know what? There's a bit of banter. There's a bit of, we're all in it together. There's a bit of, well, it's only rain, isn't it? I can have a warm shower later. But actually being in that group is something I perhaps won't pass up quite so easily in future.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah.
Well, that was abrupt. Sounds like we've come to the, sounds like we've come to the end of the line.
I'm in complete agreement with it. A lot of people in our industry keep saying, can you see this the end of meetings? I'm like, I hope not, because I don't go to a meeting just to have a face-to-face. It's literally just to talk about stuff, grab a coffee. You just find out more about people, whereas Zooms are great when you're in this situation. I think there'll be less travelling and more of this, which I think is a real good thing. Because we've just bought a whole new phone system to encourage this over phone calls. So if anything, this will be really positive because everyone's now really comfortable about doing video calls when everyone used to hate them. But that'll be a positive. But I really hope it doesn't stop people from going out and seeing one another, because that's kind of what being human's all about, isn't it?
So. Well, I think probably it'll put an end to pointless meetings and pointless calls.
People
will be a bit more on pointless travel, you know, just getting on a, I've got to get on a train to go down to London for a half hour meeting. I mean, in what sort of life does that seem like a productive use of your time? Unless of course somebody says you've got to be here, and unless you're here, Dan, you're not going to get a $5 million contract. Well, yeah, maybe that is, but I had a client once who flew to LA to get some papers signed. Right, got on the plane, flew to LA, got off the plane, went to an airport hotel, spent an hour there, and was back in time to be able to get on the return flight back to the UK. I mean, like, that just doesn't make any sense, because he could have got an advocate to do it for him, you know, a legal advocate to go and sign it. And you know, this guy wasn't a junior member of the company. He was the CEO. So he's like the Harry Kane or the Raheem Sterling. He's the chief goal scorer, and yet he's getting on there to do 24 hours of traveling and exhaust himself just to sign a contract. That doesn't seem to make sense to me. So anyway, listen, Dan, I know you've got other stuff to do in your carefully structured day, and we don't need to upset that balance. I've got to get off and do my mindful yoga in a moment.
Oh, nice.
So appreciate you taking the time for this call today. It's been awesome. It's been interesting. Yeah. If people wanted to follow you, where's the best place?
Probably Instagram and LinkedIn. So the business stuff's on LinkedIn, which is Dan Williams. I don't know how else you'd look at it. So it's just definitely Dan Williams, and then Orian Personal Care, O-R-E-A-N, Personal Care.
Dan Williams, Orian Personal Care on LinkedIn.
Yeah, and just_being_Dan on Instagram. So just being Dan. And the podcast you referred to at the beginning is called the Pocket Mentors Podcast. And that's on all the other platforms like Apple, Spotify. And there's an Instagram for that as well.
Okay. Maybe you can send me all those links later, and we'll put them in the show notes. Yeah, I'm going to link to a whole load of stuff here. We'll put a link to Orion Personal Care for the business as well, in case anybody's interested. We've got loads of books: Simon Sinek, Leaders Eat Last, and Why. We've got the Titan book about John Rockefeller, the Ryan Holiday books about ego and obstacle, Marcus Aurelius Meditation. I will repeat the William McRaven Make Your Bed thing. Yeah. I'll put a link to the podcast with Admiral Scott Jones. What else have I put there? Yeah, I think that's about it. We talked the Larry King book as well that we mentioned right at the beginning.
That's How to Talk to Anyone, Anytime, Any Place, I think it's called.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, it's worth it.
Okay, Dan. Well, once again, thanks so much for being on the call. It's been great. I appreciate you taking the time, and we'll catch up again soon.
Yeah, I hope so. Cheers, dude. Take care. Thanks, Simon.
Thanks, mate.
Right, then, that's a wrap for this week. Thanks again for listening. As always, I appreciate that you have plenty of choice out there in podcast land, so it does mean an awful lot to me when you come back regularly. If you enjoyed the podcast, please could you hop onto iTunes or Podbean and leave a rating and a comment if you can. Apparently, it's really good for the ratings, although to be absolutely honest with you, I have no idea how they work these things out. If you like the way I roll and you find some synergy with my approach to life and sport, maybe be interested in joining my SWAT Inner Circle training group. If you are, please just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com for more details. You can also use that email address to ask for my special free gift, which I have for you, which are my top 25 tips on how to be a high-performance human. Okay, that's all for this week. I'll be back next week with another great guest. So for now, enjoy the rest of your week.